from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, a new study reveals that teenage girls who switch cosmetics for 3 days show drops in chemical levels in their bodies. Researchers found that when girls switched cosmetic shampoos and lotions that had hormone disruptors to those that did not, they had a 25 to 45% drop in their chemical levels. The study looked at chemicals like phthalates and parabens, and those are found, of course, in nail polish and makeup, and we'll discuss the study, and we'll get your responses. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. An investigation by researchers from UC Berkeley and Clínica de Salud del Valle of Salinas has revealed a significant drop in the level of chemicals known as hormone disruptors in the bodies of teenage girls who did not use cosmetic products with chemicals and instead switched over for 3 days to using other cosmetic products. The study, which was published in Environmental Health Perspectives, tested 100 Latina girls. And in this morning's opening Forum Hour, we delve into the study and discuss what it means. And let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. I want to welcome here in studio Kim Harley. She's Associate Director for Health Effects at UC Berkeley Center for Environmental Research and Children's Health. She was lead author of the study on chemical exposures in cosmetics, and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good to have you. Also good to have Maritza Cardenas, who is an undergraduate majoring in molecular and cell biology at UC Berkeley. She's also an author of the study and helped work on it when she was still in high school as a teen member of Chamacos, a youth community council, a leadership training group for Salinas High School students. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here. And let me also welcome Nika Leiba, who's joining us by phone this morning, Deputy Director of Research for the Environmental A working group which researches and compiles a database rating the safety of consumer products like cosmetics and sunscreens. And welcome, Nika Leiba.
Thank you, Michael.
Glad to have you all aboard. And Kim Harley, let me begin with you, and let's talk about really what prompted this study or what got it started. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of concern about hormone disruptors. There's still a lot that we don't know and a lot that has to be investigated. But this is a joint effort, and it's a joint effort unprecedented, and it's the sort of thing that we're talking about here. I mean, coming together with a group that's right located in Salinas with Latinas.
We're concerned about potentially hormone-disrupting chemicals, and there are many chemicals out there that seem like they may mimic or block or otherwise interfere with the natural hormones in our bodies. And we're particularly concerned about these chemicals during certain critical windows of development, and that would be when the body is developing, so during pregnancy, in early childhood, but also in adolescence. So we know that adolescent girls use more makeup and personal care products than adult women, and women seem to use more than men. So this is a group that may be particularly exposed to chemicals and cosmetics.
And may be more at risk.
And may also be more at risk because this is a time of rapid reproductive development. You know, we forget sometimes that adolescence is a big time of development. It's a time of important brain development and also reproductive development. And this could be a time that we would be more concerned about hormone disruption.
Well, there's still a great deal we don't know about these chemicals. There have been associations with childhood neurodevelopment problems, with respiratory problems, with all kinds of things, obesity, for example, and I believe cancer cell growth even. But there's still a lot of research that needs to be done.
Right. And what's hard is it takes a long time to learn the effects of chemical exposures in humans. We know there were four chemicals in particular that we were concerned about that we know are in personal care products, that personal care products may be our most common source of exposure. And all of them have
been—
Can you
name those chemicals just
for
the record? Yeah.
The first one is phthalates, and these are chemicals that are used in fragrance and in nail polish and other personal care products. The phthalates can block the effects of testosterone and also seem to mimic estrogen in laboratory studies and in animal studies. And there are links with reproductive changes or neurodevelopment or respiratory problems in humans, but the human studies are fewer human studies, and it's harder to make definitive links. So the first chemical with phthalates. The second ones are parabens, and these are chemicals that are used as preservatives in makeup. And it's important to prevent the growth of mold and bacteria, but the concern with parabens is that they appear to be to mimic estrogen. They appear to be a weak estrogen, and they've been shown to make breast cancer cells proliferate in the laboratory. Now, we know almost nothing about what they do in humans, but we have some hints from laboratory studies that make us concerned. The third one was triclosan, which is an antibacterial agent that's used in your antibacterial hand soap and also in some brands of toothpaste. And this has been linked to changes in thyroid hormone in animal studies. But again, there's very little research on humans. And the fourth one is a chemical called oxybenzone, which is a sunscreen agent that is also suspected to be a weak estrogen. But this one we know almost nothing about in terms of its health effects.
These are also chemicals we should mention, although they're found in a lot of personal products for women and cosmetics and so forth, also found in products that men use.
Absolutely. I mean, we're not just talking about women or teenage girls here. We're talking about products or chemicals that are in products like soap, deodorant, shampoo, conditioner, as well as makeup. So these are chemicals actually that across the board, almost all Americans are exposed to at some level.
So Maritza, you were a high school girl in Salinas, a family of six kids.
Yes.
Now you're a student at Berkeley studying cell and molecular biology. How'd you get involved in this study? And how did you come together with UC Berkeley researchers?
Yeah, I participated in the Youth Community Council as a junior, I believe, in high school. And that was the first time that I was learning about environmental health and what that meant and public health. And then the summer right after I graduated from high school, after my senior year, was when we started the Hermosa Project. And you know, I had a really interesting role as both a research assistant, but also as a participant in the study. We had a lot of involvement in the design and the implementation of the study. So it was a really great experience.
And has certainly had a good deal of effect on you, from what I understand, including the feeling that maybe you should be buying organic products instead, though they're a lot more expensive.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the greatest takeaway from the study was really to be more aware and a more conscious buyer. And that definitely does include looking for natural products and organic products. But it also means just, you know, looking at the ingredient list and choosing products that maybe have less ingredients on there. It means, you know, reducing the exposure of products that maybe I can't part from. And unfortunately, you know, some of the products that might be healthier and might have less ingredients are more expensive. And that is a challenge, especially as a college student or as an adolescent for our participants who might not be the ones buying their products. But, you know, overall, I think I have become a more conscious buyer.
And we should just mention, so people know what the research involved, they're just taking urine samples. Of course, some urine can pass these chemicals a lot faster. I mean, some chemicals can pass through a lot quicker than others and so forth, but it concentrated on 3 days of urine samples. Yeah.
Right. It was only 3 days, which was, you know, the interesting part of it, I think. We took a urine sample before the intervention and then 3 days later a urine sample post-intervention. And from there, we were able to detect the levels of these hormone disruptors.
Let's, if we could, bring Nika Leiba into this. And again, she's Deputy Director of Research with the Environmental Working Group. I should also mention that we did invite a number of trade groups. We reached out to some beauty product trade groups to be on the program with us, independent cosmetic manufacturers and distributors. They said no. International Fragrance Association of North America did not get back to us, and Personal Care Products Council also did not get back to us. Perhaps maybe somebody in the industry will want to call in here during the course of this hour. There's an opportunity, of course, for you to join the program, and I'll tell you how you can do that shortly. But let me bring in Nika Leiba again, who's with the Environmental Working Group. And this actually, we should mention, first of all, you have a database. We'll try to put it on our website that rates a lot of these products, the safety of these products, with sort of like a stoplight, green, yellow, and red. That was launched 12 years ago. But again, there's a lot that we don't know, probably even maybe more that we don't know than we know at this point.
Yeah, I think that's 100% correct, Michael. EWG does have a skin-deep database that looks at the health and safety of more than 60,000 personal care products. And we've also done biomonitoring studies of our own, testing women and teens for a lot of these chemicals. But as you mentioned, a lot of these chemicals have no associated tests. So we don't know what their potential health impacts are, which is just as bad as knowing if they're good or bad, right? So in order to make the best choices, we suggest that consumers choose products that are that have ingredients that are well-researched and that they know are devoid of some of these harmful effects. A lot of the chemicals that were tested in this amazing study by Kim and her colleagues are well-known to have endocrine-disrupting effects in animals. And there are other chemicals that are associated with cancer and allergens, and there's just a myriad of chemicals in products that we are wary of. So we produced our Skin Deep database to help consumers choose better
products. We do have that link on our website now, kqed.org, so that listeners can avail themselves of it. But one of the things that I suppose people need to know here is that these companies don't have to register the number of chemicals they have, and moreover, it's up to the company responsibly to pretty much reveal. There's no FDA, for example, pre-market approval for cosmetic products.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. The FDA does not have a lot of oversight over cosmetics. There is no requirement for companies to tell the FDA what's in their products. There's no requirement for pre-market testing. And what is most concerning to me is that if the FDA finds that there's something wrong with a product or a lot of people are complaining about a product, the FDA does not have any recall authority. The company does not have to recall these products. It's voluntary.
Well, what can be done about that? Or is there anything at this point that's being done about that that we know of?
You know, there is a bill that was...
Isn't there a Feinstein-Collins bill that's in the works, or is that still in the works?
Yes, that's still in the works. So there's a bill, as you just mentioned, the Feinstein-Collins bill, that would give the FDA more authority, give them more oversight over personal care products. But until then, what consumers can do is educate themselves, empower themselves, and move the markets by buying better products. We've seen so many companies reformulate their products to take out these ingredients because of consumer demand. So we at EWG want to help those consumers be empowered.
It's difficult for consumers, though. I mean, particularly to keep track of all the products that, well, for example, they're getting off the shelves and looking at the labels and then, you know, maybe going to your website and so forth. There aren't any shortcuts here, really, are there?
Yeah, totally. We have the website, but we also have an app with a barcode scanner. So you can use the app at point of sale to figure out what the product scores. Because I agree with you, unless you have a chemistry degree, some of these ingredient labels are ridiculous and really hard to interpret and figure out what's better.
You could be cynical and say that may be intentional, in fact, but I wouldn't say that necessarily. Are there any general rules, though, anything we should look out for?
Well, Mirza made some really good points. Although natural and organic are sometimes better, they don't always indicate that the product is safe. It's a good moniker that the products probably don't have a lot of synthetic ingredients, but look for products with fewer ingredients.
Maybe a good rule of thumb to check anything you put on your skin.
Yes, and anything that you put all over your body and you use daily would be the first things that I would look through to make sure that those are better. Because if you're using those more often, that means your exposure is higher versus something that you use probably once a month.
Okay, I know listeners have a lot of questions about this, so I'm going to open the phone lines now. We're talking about the fact that a study was done that switched cosmetics and dramatically lowered chemical levels for teenage girls. About 100 girls were in this study, Latina girls, and it was a study jointly done by UC Berkeley and Clinica de Salud del Valle de Salinas, actually finding that when girls switched cosmetics, shampoos and lotions, hormone disruptors actually did not occur to, 25 to 45% drop in terms of what was inside their body and chemical levels, and that's pretty dramatic. Let me find out what your responses are to this study. study and any questions you might have about it by giving you a phone number to call. Our toll-free number available now. It's 866-733-6786. And you can join us, as I said, now. If you have questions or comments, feel free to call 866-733-6786, whether you're listening to Forum on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. You can also email us. Our email address is simply forum@kqed.org. Or post questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, communicate with us by tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Talking with Nika Leiba, who is Deputy Director of Research with the Environmental Working Group, which does research on and compiles a database about the safety of consumer products like cosmetics and sunscreens. And with us in studio, Maritza Cardenas, who is an undergraduate majoring in molecular and cell biology at UC Berkeley and author of the study, who helped work on it, got involved in it back in high school, and Kim Harley, here with us in studio, is Associate Director for Health Effects with UC Berkeley's Center for Environmental Research and Children's Health, and she was a lead author on the study. Can you tell us a little bit, Maritza, about HRMOSA?
Yeah, so HRMOSA was the acronym that we chose for our study. It means beautiful in Spanish. And I think, you know, it kind of encompasses our study pretty well. We hopefully, through this study, were able to empower our Latina participants not only to really be aware of the makeup and all of the personal care products that they're choosing for themselves. But hopefully it was a great educational opportunity for them as well. And I know personally it definitely was. And hopefully they were able to see that higher education is possible through the directors of the study that were present during the study. And also hopefully through the research assistants.
And Kim Harley, what do you hope comes out of this study? I mean, other than education, enlightenment, maybe more wariness about products by consumers?
Well, there were two things that we were trying to do with this study. The first was we wanted to show whether we were interested in these four hormone-disrupting chemicals, and we wanted to show whether these chemicals were associated with beauty product use, which we did, and then also to show whether there were ways that teenage girls and really all of us could lower those levels. So that was really positive for us. We found that when people changed the beauty products and the personal care products that they used for just 3 days, levels of these four different chemicals went down by 25 to 45% in their body. So we measured the levels of the chemicals in their body before and then 3 days later. But another thing that we really wanted to do was, as Maritza is saying, work with girls in this community. So not only did we have the 100 girls that were in our study, that were our study participants, we also had 15 youth from the community that we really wanted to involve in all levels of this study. So Maritza and many of the other youth were really involved from the beginning to the end. They helped us design the study, which was really important. They helped us recruit teenage girls to participate, which made it just more culturally.
I think this is terrific. I mean, you're getting young people involved, making them really want to get involved in science to a greater degree.
And then, yeah, and we were able to hire them over the summer as UC Berkeley research assistants, and they did the work. They were the interviewers when the girls came into the study. Maritza and her colleagues interviewed the girls. They took their urine samples. They got paid.
They could afford organic chemicals to a greater degree.
Well, I hope so. I mean, part of the issue is that in the community of Salinas, there aren't a lot of opportunities for teenagers for employment and certainly not for science education. And to be able to show them that science is something that can be applicable and can be fun and can really, you know, maybe help make a difference in their community was a really rewarding part of this study.
I think this bringing together and doing research with young kids like this is really maybe the wave of the future. But let me bring our callers into this, and let's begin with a caller from Woodside. Linda, that's you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Hi, I'm a doctor of pharmacy and also a professor of pharmacy practice here in the Bay Area. And also I'm a past custom compounder of cosmetics. And so I wanted to weigh in a little bit on maybe some missing pieces that you're speakers today haven't really discussed, and since you put that invitation out there for people from the industry to call in.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
No problem. So the first comment I wanted to make that I think confuses a lot of consumers out there is the kind of role of some of these chemicals that are part of this study. So, for example, parabens. Parabens are a derivative of naturally occurring plant. So, for example, blueberries and strawberries and black currants and grapes. The kind that's used, however, in cosmetics is a synthesized version. So it's kind of like taking a more specific chemical version of what we find in natural plants. But the concentrations that are used are very low to do what it needs to do. So for it to be bactericidal, which means kill bacteria, or fungicidal, which is to keep the mold growth from happening, is typically about 0.01% of the concentration. And that's only needed when you have water. When you have water in something that's custom compounded, you have to keep the mold growth out. So it's very low concentrations. But after saying that, I want to make sure I say concentration is key. So you're oftentimes looking at teenagers or adults that aren't just using one product with parabens or with phthalates, but using multiple. So if they're using a shampoo, a face wash, a hand soap, and cosmetics that all use these ingredients, it's additive. But if you're just a consumer who's using one product and it has parabens as its preservative, it's not necessarily a cause to be freaked out or concerned that you're going to get cancer or have major, you know, estrogen shifts in your body. And then the final comment I wanted to make has to do with kind of consumer knowledge of knowing where to find information on safe chemicals. So while the FDA doesn't specifically regulate cosmetic compounding, it does regulate what's called good manufacturing practices. So it does require that consumers, or basically companies that market to consumers, follow good compounding practices to make sure that their product is clean and free from toxic ingredients. And there's a list on the FDA website of chemicals commonly used in cosmetics that are known to have either cancer-causing properties or have properties that could cause birth defects, that kind of thing. So that is available on the FDA website.
Linda, I thank you for that call. And let me go right to Nika Leiba on this. The points that you just heard from Linda, Nika Leiba, about good manufacturing and about concentrations, can I get you a comment? Reaction?
Sure. I think Linda is right when she says concentration is key. And it's true that a lot of these products have really small concentrations of these ingredients. But as she said, we're not using these products in isolation. Women use, on average, 12 products a day. Personal care products a day. Men on average use 6 personal care products a day. But these ingredients are also found in food. They're ingredients that are found in our water. They're ingredients that are found in our air. And all of them in combination are concerning. She had mentioned that some of these ingredients are naturally derived. I also want to say that poison ivy is also naturally derived, but you don't want to rub that on your skin. So I always like to push back on the fact that just because something is naturally derived doesn't mean that it's safer.
Yeah, good point, and I thank you for that.
And one other thing about the FDA, the FDA may have some things on their website, but unless it's mandatory and companies are required to follow the FDA guidelines, then we can't be sure that every company is doing so, and nothing by the FDA right now is mandatory, except the 11 chemicals that they've banned in personal care products.
There is no hammer, so to speak, from the FDA on this. No teeth.
No teeth at all.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's where EWG comes in.
All right. I want to bring more of our callers in and get more listeners. We're talking again about a study that talks that really reveals that switching cosmetics can dramatically lower chemical levels in teenage girls and probably in all the rest of us. And you may want to weigh in if you have questions or comments. We welcome your involvement. Again, a toll-free number is yours. It's 866-733-6786 or email us forum at kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about a study that was recently published revealing that teenage girls who switched cosmetics for 3 days showed drops, actually, in the chemical levels and in their bodies. This was a joint effort by UC Berkeley researchers and a group from Salinas called Clínica de Salud del Valle. And we have guests in our studio here, Kim Harley, who is the lead author of the study, and Maritza Cardenas, who is involved in the study since she was a high school student. She's now an undergraduate majoring in molecular and cell biology. And we have Nika Leiba on the phone with us, Deputy Director of Research with the Environmental Working Group. Nika Leiba, if you would you mention that app by name? A lot of people are asking about it.
Sure. It's called our Healthy Living app. You can search for it by going to ewg.org/apps.
And again, and I want to mention once again that the Environmental Working Group's website is on our website in terms of getting more information about how you can be warned whether something is green, yellow, or red. And obviously, red is to be avoided, yellow is to be cautious with, and green is okay. Looking at a Facebook comment here, and you can, of course, send us comments on our Facebook page from Ramona, who writes, "We can thank the beauty industry for convincing women that their natural selves are ugly and in need of drastic improvement. The teenage girl is the perfect consumer. Imagine if it was small children being allowed to use these toxic products." And we'll go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Novato and welcome Aaron. You're on the air. Morning.
Good morning. I'm actually undergoing in vitro fertilization treatment, IVF, and I'm wondering if there have been or will be any research done on the effects of fertility. And I'll take my answer off air.
Okay. Kim Harley, to your knowledge?
There is definitely some research going on. One of the things that's difficult with these endocrine-disrupting chemicals, there are many different endocrine-disrupting chemicals. Some of them are in cosmetics and personal care products, but there's a lot we don't know about them. A lot of the research at this point has been done in animals, and obviously humans are not rats. And there are some human studies going on, but we are, you know, it takes a while to get that research out there and published, and it always has to be replicated. So one of the things that's really sort of a murky area here is that we know enough about these hormone-disrupting chemicals to be concerned, but we don't have a lot of proof right now. And I think that's where the gray area comes into play. I will tell you that phthalates, which are the chemical that's often found in fragrance, not in all fragrance. There are certainly fragrances that don't have phthalates in them.
And nail polish too, though. Yeah.
And in nail polish also, yes, although it's being taken out of more and more nail polishes, has been associated with reproductive effects in men. Not so much women, but in men, there have been studies now in humans showing that phthalate exposure may be associated with sperm quality and testosterone in men. And certainly there's research going on still looking at hormone-disrupting chemicals and how that affects women's reproductive health too.
I think I have a caller on the line from the cosmetics industry. Kathy, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I wrote Kim, and she did respond back to some of my concerns. I have a small business in Richmond. We started over 40 years ago in Berkeley, and my mother started it. She sort of pioneered the use of natural ingredients 40 years in cosmetics. We don't use parabens or DEP in most of our products. We have a few products that can't be preserved without the parabens that are older formulas. But I do have an issue with keep saying that our industry is unregulated. I am regulated by the FDA. Organic products are regulated by the USDA.
Sorry, Kathy, regulated. Nobody used the word unregulated. I think.
Well, no, yeah. She said it's self-reporting and that nobody's watching this stuff. That's not true. Most manufacturers, if any national products on the market is, they are regulated by the FDA. We have to follow good manufacturing processes. We have to follow, most of us follow Prop 65, the California Safe Cosmetics Act. We have the California Air Resources Board. We even have the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms regulating colognes and shipments. So my issues are also with some of the materials that they have on the Hermosa flyer, saying that DEP is the same as perfume. If you see perfume on the label, that means there's DEP in the product, which isn't true. None of our perfumes have DEP. Natural doesn't make something safe. There are also studies that show lavender is a hormone disruptor, an endocrine disruptor. Many of the natural products on the market contain bacteria. Speaking to the last woman who called, they also, some of the natural product companies don't tell the truth about their products. Many natural mascaras are shown to grow bacteria after 6 weeks.
Kathy, let me interrupt you because didn't you also say that you're regulated by at least seven different agencies?
Yeah. I mean, I follow the regulations of seven different agencies. The cosmetic company is not out to hurt people. Obviously, if somebody gets a rash or gets hurt or gets sick, we're liable. We're not out to hurt people. That we have to follow good manufacturing processes. The FDA visits facilities and makes sure that they do regularly. Labs are visited by the FDA. We have to follow how we list things on our ingredient listing. We're I guess not regular. regulated, but there is a Cosmetic Toiletry and Fragrance Association. They have guidelines called RITHM about fragrances. All fragrance companies, if they are honorable companies, I guess you would say major companies, follow these guidelines.
You made a case for oversight here. I wonder, Nika Leiba, could we get a reaction from you?
Well, and I have one thing.
Sure.
Hold on a second, if you could, Kathy. I'd like to hear what Nika has to say.
Yeah, as Kathy, you mentioned, the companies are regulated. I don't think anybody said that they were not regulated. What we said is that they are under-regulated. She talked about the FDA's good manufacturing products guidelines, but if you go on the FDA site now, you will see that those are simply guidelines. Companies aren't required to follow them. Also, she mentioned a lot of laws that require California companies to follow them, but there is no national law to ensure safety of these products. What we want is something that if a consumer bought a product in West Virginia, it would be just as safe as if a consumer bought a product in California.
Any response from you, Kathy? Go ahead.
Yes, the major companies that you're talking about, we're not talking, you know, the thing that you need to be really worried about is people who make products in their kitchen. Those are full. That's what you really need to worry about. Any major company that sells into California needs to follow these rules. So even if you buy it in West Virginia, if they sell into California, they need to follow these guidelines. And just because a company isn't there isn't a law, doesn't mean that the manufacturers are not following these regulations. So you need to look at whether companies are actually doing it. I guarantee you all major cosmetic companies are following FDA regulations.
Kathy, let me thank you for the call. And Kim Harley, you want to weigh in here?
Sure. I mean, I do appreciate that this is a difficult issue and that the chemicals that we were looking at are potential endocrine disruptors. We have evidence that they may be endocrine disruptors. And again, these were phthalates used in fragrance, parabens used as a preservative, triclosan used in antibacterial soap and some toothpaste, and oxybenzone, which is a sunscreen agent. All of these are allowed to be used in cosmetics and personal care products, and they're widely used. Nobody has told manufacturers that they can't use them. Our concern is that there is some evidence that they may impact human health. It's not conclusive evidence. It's not even at this point very strong evidence, but we're starting to get evidence that makes us concerned. And we know from other studies that these chemicals that can mimic hormones can have long-term effects on our health, often effects that don't show up for decades after the exposure happens. So it's a question of whether we want to, you know, err on the side of safety or not.
You also believe that there's under-regulation, that there needs to be more monitoring, that there needs to be more comprehensive regulation?
You know, I'm a scientist. I'm not a policy expert. So I would let the policy experts answer that question. But I do hope that good science is helping to influence those policies.
Well, let me thank Kathy for her call and go right to another caller. Carol, that's you. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. First, I'd like to comment on the previous caller that you know, she's talking about major companies, but our adolescent girls who are very price sensitive, they're buying their cosmetics from the beauty supply shops, of which, you know, they're labelless, they're cheap, and we don't even know where the products come from. That's just a comment. And then my question is, what are the implications with these hormone blockers and interceptors for obesity and the weight gain that we see? Because we know that also young girls use a lot of these products as well, not just adolescents. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Kim Harley?
Well, that's a really good point. And one of the things that's interesting about these hormone-disrupting chemicals is that hormones are the chemical messengers in our bodies that regulate all sorts of aspects of growth and development and reproduction. And one of the things that we've started to learn in recent years is that obesity and diabetes also are mediated in a certain degree by hormones. And so we're starting to get evidence. And again, it's you know, the evidence is sparse at this point, but we're starting to get scientific evidence that maybe obesity and diabetes are also influenced by hormone-disrupting chemicals. One of the chemicals, one of the phthalates in fragrance, that's not in all fragrances, of course, but some fragrances contain diethyl phthalate. There's starting to be some evidence that that may be associated with obesity. The other chemicals that we looked at, there's no evidence with obesity, but certainly with some of the other hormone-disrupting disrupting chemicals that are out there. There have been studies in humans and in animals linking them to obesity.
I do want to go to more of your calls, but let me go to some questions that are coming in here online. And if I could go to you, Nikolaiba. Karen wants to know about sunscreen. She says, can you please comment about the lack of scrutiny by the FDA on sunscreens, which we are now slathering on ourselves and which also contain carcinogenic chemicals?
Yeah, the one thing I would want to say is that the FDA does have stronger oversight over sunscreens because those are considered over-the-counter drugs. However, there are ingredients like oxybenzone, which Kim tested for in this amazing study, that are linked to endocrine disruption. There are also other ingredients in the list of inactive ingredients like parabens and phthalates and other ingredients of concern. One of the biggest problems or issues with sunscreens, however, is are they providing adequate sun protection, which is why we produce an annual sunscreen guide to look not just at the ingredients and the ingredient safety, but to also make sure that the product is providing adequate UVA and UVA.
I think that may be I remember doing a program on sunscreens. That may be a bigger issue in some respects. But there's another question here, if I could go to you again, Nika, about fragrances from Susan, who wants to know about ingredient called simply fragrance on cosmetic levels. She says, I've understood that artificial fragrances are chemically derived and can be cancer-causing. Is this true?
The problem with fragrance is that it's a quote-unquote black box. When you see the term fragrance on the label, that can be a mixture of a number of ingredients. Companies can use up to 3,000 ingredients or any number of 3,000 ingredients in their fragrance mixture, and you just don't know what it is. So you need to be educated and able to make better decisions and choose safer products. So we advocate for companies disclosing what is in their fragrance mixture so that consumers can make better choices.
And we have put up links to the Environmental Working Group, also the FDA and the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics at our website, kqed.org/forum. Let me go to more of your calls. We're going to go next to Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome, Karen. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you all? Thanks for taking my call. My question has to do with petroleum jelly. Is there anything in there we need to be concerned about? And have they done any studies on minerals in cosmetics?
Well, I don't think petroleum jelly was part of the study, but maybe you can help us here, Nika. Go ahead, Nika.
Sure. Petroleum jelly can be contaminated with something called PAHs, which is associated with carcinogenicity. However, a lot of companies can filter out or take out the PAHs. So I would just contact the company and ask them if PAHs are in their petroleum jelly.
And she wanted to know about mineral makeup. Do you know about that, Neba?
Minerals often are contaminated with heavy metals. Again, I would ask the company if they've done testing for heavy metals, you know, lead or chromium, and make sure that you're choosing products with lower lead contamination.
Let me thank the caller. We're going to move along and go to another caller. And Marie, join us. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. I wanted to call in regarding the caller who said that products are very heavily regulated and that they're not out trying to hurt the consumer. I spent thousands of dollars and numerous medical appointments trying to figure out why I kept getting a rash. And it turns out I'm allergic to parabens. And so I spent a lot of money. And that caller said if there is a rash, then they will be compensated. Well, that sounds great. I would love to get reimbursed for all of my medical bills. These products are not heavily regulated, and parabens go by so many different names that it becomes a real fight for me to figure out what products I can use and make sure that they're not sneaking it in there somehow. And maybe these people aren't trying to hurt consumers, but they're doing their best to make sure they pay as little as possible so they get the best return on investment. And it's hurting the consumers as a result.
All right, let me let that comment stand, and thank you for it, Marie. Let me go back to Maritza Cardenas, who's here in studio with us. Maritza, what have you changed in your life now as a result of this study and your involvement in it?
Yeah, I think the study actually had a great impact in my life, especially after the study. When I was first moving into college, I was buying, you know, all my new products. And I'm actually lucky enough to live with my sister right now. And so together we were really trying to be conscious and aware of what we were going to put into our new apartment and what kind of products we were going to use. I actually did use the Skin Deep database for a lot of my products. And I don't continue to use it as much now. The study, you know, was done 3 years ago. But I think that just, you know, that educational piece of our study and realizing that some of these chemicals have a long-term effect has really helped me, you know, be aware and try to limit my exposure as much as possible.
But you're being sold these kind of products all the time. I mean, it's a blitz. It's a constant. I happen to see a comment by Pamela Anderson, who used to be more famous than she is now, but she said, you know, natural beauty comes after usually about 3 hours of work on my face. Which is a good line, actually, when you think about it. But the truth of the matter is you're almost inveigled, I use that word, to use all these products and to try to make yourself beautiful. Young women are very susceptible to that.
Yeah, I think it's a challenge. And during the study, when my products were replaced, I, you know, couldn't use some of the ones that I was used to, certain eyeshadows or makeup that that I was used to using on a daily basis. And I think it was difficult to, you know, have my face or my body more exposed, kind of in the sense, I guess, of it being more natural. And it was only 3 days, which I guess, you know, was a good thing. And
what's worse, not eating for 3 days or not using makeup?
Not using makeup. Definitely. No, I mean, it definitely depended on the participant and what their levels and how much they used makeup. But, you know, it was, I think, a good experience. And I did gain some confidence after just those 3 days of limiting my use and realizing that it's, you know, a choice for my health was important.
Good. Let me bring on more callers. Patrick, join us. You're on the air.
Thank you, Michael. One of the chemicals that was mentioned, triclosan, it's also been linked, I believe, to studies that show it maybe creating superbugs, the antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And then the other thing I'll say is the cosmetic industry may not be out to hurt people, but they're certainly, number one, two, three, four, five high points for them are profit, 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 profit. And they fight tooth and nail to prevent these regulations from carrying forth the way they should. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for that comment. Again, we'll let that stand. And I'm looking at a question here from a listener named Don. And let me go to you on this, if I may, Kim Harley. As a parent of a young woman with an autoimmune disease, did this study see any correlation to these chemicals to women with autoimmune disorders? They are almost always young women and rarely seen in men.
Well, the short answer to that is that this study was really looking at whether girls were exposed to certain chemicals and whether there were ways that we could decrease their exposure. We weren't really looking – this study just didn't have the ability to look at the health effects of these chemicals. Certainly, there's lots of other research, including research going on in our research group at Berkeley, looking at what the long-term health effects of these chemicals are. But I can't answer that from this study. I will say that that is one of the concerns. It's not my area of research, but I do know that there is concern that endocrine-disrupting or hormone-disrupting chemicals may impact immune function. So it's certainly an area that people are looking at.
There is research in this area. In fact, here at UCSF that I know of. Let me go to more calls, and let me go next to Mary. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air. Morning.
Hi, thank you. So I am a registered aromatherapist, and I also make all my own products and soaps. And I actually have a certified farm in my backyard where I grow most of my, for a lot of my herbs and stuff. But my question is, has the Environmental Working Group ever considered testing the suppliers who supply all of us organic, natural, you know, product makers? Because we have no idea how long the shea butter has been sitting in a warehouse or how long, you know, any of the products or supplies that we use for our products have been, you know, sitting somewhere, or if they've gotten wet or anything like that.
Yeah, Nicolaiba.
I think that's a great question. Thank you for asking it. EWG has done some testing, but more importantly, we have a new verification program for personal care products called EWG Verified. And in order for a product to be verified, the company has to submit testing from all of their suppliers, testing for contamination, testing for, like I said, heavy metals and bacteria. They have to follow good manufacturing practices. They can't have ingredients of concern, and on and on. So we're very, very proud to be launching this EWG Verified verification program, which takes into account what the caller just mentioned.
And let me thank the caller. And again, Nicolaiba is Deputy Director of Research with the Environmental Working Group. And our next caller is joining us from Napa. Cindy, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you. I love the Environmental Work Group, and I have been an esthetician, a Hollywood makeup artist, and I've been in the fashion business my whole life. And I'm in my 50s. I have autoimmune problems, and I have been trying to run a business that's clean and non-toxic. And my biggest concern is that the suppliers and the producers of these supposedly non-toxic products are not non-toxic. I mean, they have all these ingredients, and the general public does not understand this. Unfortunately, I love this industry, so I'm constantly researching. But I've also found that, you know, I've worked with companies. I have a lot of considered non-toxic natural products, and, you know, they'll have ingredients that are clearly not healthy. And it'll say, you know, clean, non-toxic on it. I mean, you see this even in the drugstores. I mean, you find oxybenzone in just about every sunscreen in the drugstore. I mean, so, and then, you know, hydroquinone, for example, I mean, that's something that, you know, is a lightening agent. It's in, you can get it over the counter in America. You can't get it over the counter in many other countries. And it is known DNA mutagen and known carcinogen. And we have doctors, you know, plastic surgeons who, you know, clients go to, and dermatologists, and they say, you know, I have this dark spot on my face. What can I do about it? They will compound up to 14% hydroquinone and give it to a client, or, you know, using Obagi or, you know, products like that. And, you know, they're using nanosomes to actually drive it in deeper into the system. And these people have no idea what they're doing. They're just like, oh, wow, this is great. My doctor gave this to me. And, you know, of course this is okay for me because my doctor gave it to me. And they'll keep these people on this for, you know, 7 years. And then my clients come to me and go, oh, wow, I have cancer. And I'm like, wow. Well, I've told you not to use that, and you shouldn't use it for more than 6 months. So,
Cindy,
I mean, I'm just
no, I appreciate your perspective, and I thank you for the call. Any comment from you on that, Kim Harley?
No.
Just let it stand, or Nicolaiba?
Yeah, sure. Again, I think these are some great points. Hydroquinone is associated with cancer. I think, more importantly, just a lot isn't known about these ingredients, and consumers should be concerned, which is why, you know, we are doing the Verified program, and we have Skin Deep. Because the one thing I do want to point out is there are some companies that are trying to make better products and really want to do the right thing, regardless of the lack in regulations. So we do want to support those companies. It's not, you know, not everybody is using harmful ingredients. But sometimes it's just hard to tell which products are better just from the store shelves without adequate regulations, which is why we have Skin Deep and EWG Verified.
There's a comment from a listener who says, I use the Environmental Working Group's app a lot when I shop. One point of frustration is when the information on an ingredient is not available. Can your guest from the EWG offer her opinion about whether it's better to go product with a higher score that lots of information is available, or on one without a score because of lack of information?
You know, and that's a personal decision. We make it very clear if the information is available, if it's limited, if it's fair or robust. All of that is included with the Skin Deep score. I personally look for products that have more information so that I can make a more educated decision. But this is completely up to the user. We'll give you all the we tell you what's there, and then you can make that choice.
And again, we have links to the Environmental Working Group and the FDA and the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics at our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm looking at a tweet here from Annie, who writes, how does a product being cruelty-free correlate with the amount of chemicals used? Anybody have any insight into that, perhaps from your perspective, Nika Leiba?
Cruelty-free, as far as I
animals, know, and, yeah.
Yes, means that it wasn't tested on animals. In terms of ingredient safety, there's no correlation there. Some people, you know, care a lot about animal treatment and animal cruelty, and that means something to them. And so they should look for that mark if it does. But it does not give any indication at all about ingredient safety.
We have seconds left. I want to get you on here quickly, Max, if you could.
Yes, hi. There are rising levels of multiple chemical sensitivity everywhere in this country and in the Bay Area, absolutely. When I hear people talking about fragrance at all, and especially among young people, it is very difficult for me to hear as a person with MCS. Young people have no reason to be using fragrance. Adults have no reason to be using fragrance. There are fragrance-free products everywhere. And even if they don't have phthalates, fragrances are making many people around you sick. It's a community issue.
Okay, we're going to have to let it stand there because we're out of time. Let me thank you, Max, for the call, and thanks to our guests, Kim Harley, Maritza Cardenas, and Nika Leiba. And we have another hour of Forum ahead. We're going to talk about the cost of towing here in San Francisco. Why is it higher here than any city in the country? And what's being done about it? Stay tuned for that in the hour ahead. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.